The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
A very good morning. You're tuned to the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. As always, we've lots to come on the show. We've the Garda information slot coming up after 10. So if you'd like to contribute to the show today, get in touch with an issue, get in touch about an issue we're raising, or raise an issue yourself, you can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25 000. You can call us on 074 91 25 000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. We've also got a Q&A about Poland Day coming up a little later as well. So if you have any questions about getting involved in Friday's presidential election, get in touch with us now with any questions you have. We're going to start though with a look at today's paper and a story that is right across the papers today, and you will have heard it on our news bulletins as well. This is in the Irish Independent. So Gardaí are investigating the alleged serious sexual assault of a 10-year-old girl in West Dublin. The incident happened overnight between Sunday and the early hours of yesterday morning at the entrance to the City West Hotel. Detectives are continuing to question a man aged in his 20s in relation to the alleged assault. An area at the entrance of the City West Hotel, which is housing international protection applicants, was earlier cordoned off to facilitate an examination by Gardaí. Detectives were alerted to the incident yesterday after the child reported the matter to care workers, who in turn contacted Gardaí. The girl is in state care but is not a resident of the Asylum Accommodation Centre. A criminal investigation was launched and a suspect was arrested by Gardaí a short time later. Although the male was detained at the City West Hotel, he had recently been residing at a separate state-run international protection centre. He's understood to have come to Ireland a number of years ago seeking asylum. And it's also reported that he was denied international protection and a deportation order was issued against him. So it's a very concerning story, and obviously for the child, they were in the care of Tusla, and it's understood that they had made a day trip to Dublin, that the child had absconded, and I don't know the in-betweens then, but it's understood that she did remain in contact with Tusla staff during that time. But later revealed, unfortunately, the attack to them. Moving now to The Sun. A man who stabbed his former girlfriend 50 times with part of the knife still in her skull today was jailed for 14 years. Sentencing, Josh O'Brien, aged 22, Miss Justice Mary Ellen Ring described the violence he used on 21-year-old Niamh Kelly as breathtaking. Such young age to receive such injuries, and also to be, you know, sentenced to 14 years. It's obviously warranted, but two young lives completely ruined there. So her survival was nothing short of a miracle, the judge said. But the young mum now lives a totally different life and will face limitations and challenges nobody should have to endure. Miss Justice Ring added, all of this was avoidable. All of it flows from the actions of Josh O'Brien. At the time of the attack, Miss Kelly had gone to get ready for a concert the following day. She never made it to that concert. And those carefree days are gone too. When noting that O'Brien had no previous convictions, the judge said she is conscious of the significant violence to partners and ex-partners by persons without a criminal background. I saw a video of that young girl speaking outside court yesterday, and her bravery was amazing. And, you know, she's obviously had so much medical care and so much rehabilitation, and she was told she would never walk again. And to see her then, you know, she obviously still has a long way to go, but she's able to stand on her own and walk on her own with the aid of crutches. But just to think again that, you know, her life is completely transformed in a negative way, that, you know, she has to live with this now. And you can see, you know, some of the injuries that she still lives with as well. Very shocking. The Irish Daily Mail, the headline is, voters will make voices heard as grocery inflation rockets higher. Grocery inflation is at its highest level for almost 2 years and is over double the overall inflation rate, new figures show. The soaring supermarket prices will put the squeeze on family purses, especially as there was no relief in the budget just 2 weeks ago. The figures were released by supermarket analyst World Panel yesterday, with its business development director Emer Healy saying the next few weeks is a busy time for shoppers, but with the latest budget for 2026 being announced against a backdrop of economic uncertainty. There will be more pressure on shoppers and it may have an impact on their discretionary spending. And this is something obviously nobody wants to hear as we head towards Christmas, and there just seems to be no light at the end of the tunnel. Some of the comparisons that the Irish Daily Mail has made when comparing prices from December 2023 to prices today, a 2 litre full fat milk is up 29 cent. Half a dozen large eggs are up 13 cent. 1 kg of sirloin steak is up €4.85. 1 kg of bananas is up 19 cent. 1 pound of butter is up €1.06. Cheddar cheese is up 51 cent. 1 kg of white sugar is actually down 4 cent. And the price of potatoes, 2.5 kg was €3.74 in December 2023. It's down now to €3.66, down 8 cent. And those are everyday items that we all have, everyday staples that we have in the cupboard. The Irish Times. Now, I find this an interesting story. Access to science, technology, engineering and math subjects remain low in all girls' schools. A new survey has found, with applied or practical STEM subjects on offer varying greatly between school types. A survey carried out earlier this year by iWish, a programme aiming to increase participation in STEM among girls, found that 55% of girls in single-sex secondary schools see limited subject choices as a barrier. This compares to 37% of girls in mixed schools, with those in all girls' schools less likely to have access to applied STEM subjects. I find this interesting because my sister went on to study engineering, so she obviously had an interest in STEM subjects, and I can't remember, she went to a mixed school, but I can't remember the exact subjects that she did study, but I don't remember them being overly STEM related. Like, I don't remember her studying maths. I'm not sure if she did a science. She might have done one science. But the concern is that if girls aren't, you know, studying these subjects at secondary school, they might get enough points then to go on and study engineering at college or university, but they don't have that background then to help them through their further studies. And it's just another example of, you know, we talk about gender pay gap in employment, but to think that that gender gap exists in education as well. Now, the Irish Daily Mirror. A man has pleaded guilty to stalking a social media influencer who alleged he followed her from a street into a hotel lift and then to her room holding a belt while staring at her. Dennis Morris, 24, appeared at Dublin District Court yesterday when Judge Teresa Kelly noted he was pleading guilty. She adjourned sentencing until November the 10th for prosecution facts and a victim impact statement to be heard. The judge will also consider if it's necessary to order a pre-sentence probation report. I think that it's the right case, but I think this influencer has already outlined the incident on social media. I'm not sure if she has taken it down since, but if it's it's very, very similar if it is the same case. But she highlighted the whole thing and discussed how she took precautions thinking that that was protecting her safety. And then this man allegedly followed her into the hotel, was in the lift with her. She documents it all about how he got into the hotel, how he entered the lift and how he followed her to her room. And it was very frightening because of all the steps that she did take, if it is the same case, was just crazy. It's something that maybe every day we wouldn't think of doing, but she was, you know, aware of her own safety and did take precautions, and then this still happened. But I'm not sure if she's since removed it or if that is her, what the implications of her posting that video could be for the trial. Finally, the Irish Daily Star. There have been over 11,000 applications to the two Garda recruitment competitions held in 2025. The latest competition, which closed on October the 9th, attracted 4,334 applications. This comes after the competition held in February received more than 6,784 applications. Of these, 57% were first-time applicants to a Garda recruitment competition. The September-October competition saw continued strong interest from people over 30, with 40% of applicants in this age category. In the February campaign, it was 42%. The current number of Gardaí is 14,325 as of September the 30th. At the moment, there are 564 Garda trainees in training. It's great to see such a positive uptake and the interest in applying to be a member of an Garda Síochána. And, you know, we get the press releases every so often about how many new recruits are going to be stationed across the county. And unfortunately, Donegal does get quite a low number, despite there being so many representations calling for, you know, additional Garda resources here from people, you know, involved on the ground, from local councillors following an incident. But hopefully there will be a turning point and we will get more Gardaí here in the county. But it is positive to see so many interested in such a career, and particularly those that are older. So they, you know, they might think, although over 30 isn't old at all, but, you know, they think maybe once they hit a certain age that they can't apply. But it was great this year, whenever we saw the new, you know, them graduating from the Garda College, you know, there was a, I can't remember his name, but he was from Ahearn, the new guard, and I can't remember what age he was, but he joined later in life. And it's great to see that, you know, if you want to follow that career, that you can indeed. If you've got a view on any of those stories that are in the papers today, get in touch by giving us a call on 074 91 25000 or text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000. And as I mentioned, you can also email comments at highlandradio.com.
Highland Radio Time Checks brought to you by AirGrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. AirGrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is...
The time is now 18 minutes past nine. Now, every year we hear about Shoebox Appeals, and it's an annual campaign to deliver gifts to children who need it. I'm joined now by CEO of Team Hope, Deborah Lowry. Good morning to you, Deborah.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. So, Deborah, what are you looking for this year?
Well, this year is actually our 15th anniversary of Team Hope, and over that period of time we have... The people of Ireland have managed to donate and package up 2.8 million Christmas shoeboxes delivered to over 38 countries in that space of time. So we want to make this year, 2025, the biggest ever, and really try and reach that 3 millionth mark, which obviously we can think of a shoebox, but if you think of every single shoebox as a child, really. So it would be incredible if we can encourage everyone, as always, to get involved. Donegal has been brilliant over the years. We've got five different centres throughout Donegal, in Dunfanaghy, Portnoy, Buncrana, Letterkenny and Annagry. And over the last 3 years, Donegal itself as a region have donated something like almost 30,000 Christmas shoeboxes. So
yes, huge figures.
Yeah, just more of the same. And, you know, these shoeboxes are not just, obviously they're filled with wonderful things that bring the child joy on the day. But, you know, we talk about the four W's: to wash, to wear, to write, and something to wow. But I think more importantly, it's that invisible gifts that we don't see of joy and hope and love that these children, thousands and thousands of kilometres away, when they open that box, they think that somebody very far away that they will never meet has thought about them. So there's something pretty special about that, both for the people doing it here and the children particularly doing it here, but also very much so for the children receiving it and their parents watching that as well.
And it's great to see that spirit reflected here. The people in Donegal, as you mentioned, almost 30,000 shoeboxes sent over the last 3 years. Where exactly, what parts of the world do these shoeboxes go to?
Yeah, well, I mean, last year's shoeboxes just from Donegal itself went to Eswatini in Africa, Burkina Faso, Malawi and Albania. And That's just Donegal's boxes. Last year they went to 13 different countries, and as I said, over the 15 years, something like 38 countries. And I was very fortunate to get to Malawi in March, Malawi and Lesotho. And oh my goodness, if I could bottle up the joy and the absolute wonder seeing you know, a couple hundred children sitting under you know, a tree at their little school, opening these boxes. You know, if we could somehow bottle that and bring it back and show everyone at home, it would just be incredible. And obviously, when we were in Malawi as well, a lot of these shoeboxes really just act as a gateway. And I don't think people in Ireland recognise that. So obviously, they're doing it this time of year. They're packaging up. There's various bits and pieces to put in the Christmas shoebox. But when we get to those communities, particularly in Africa, we try and stay. So we're trying to look beyond box and looking at communities that really need our help the most. And so in Malawi, for instance, we'd started a little pig farm because they had been absolutely hammered over the last few years with weather and drought and hurricanes, and crops are not very resilient to all of those environmental challenges. So pigs are very robust little animals, who knew? So we started, sponsored a piggery project. And as a result of that, you know, women in particular are managing that project. But as a result of that, children are eating better. They're able to afford to buy school uniforms to go to school. And it's just the ripple effect that it all starts with the simple act of schools or businesses or sports clubs getting involved in filling shoeboxes.
And I suppose that's the aim of, you know, this shoebox appeal, raising the awareness. But as you mentioned there, there's so much additional support that can be delivered. But this is a small step for people to help and for Team Hope to raise awareness as well.
It absolutely is. And, you know, we have a very small window every year to talk about Christmas way too early before Halloween. But as you said, it's much more. Team Hope's work goes all year round. And we're serving the most vulnerable of children throughout. You know, we deliberately work in countries where there isn't much aid, where there isn't much help, and work with very trusted partners. And we're a team of seven ourselves, so we couldn't do any of this. You know, a special shout out this morning when I am on air to all the volunteers, not just in Donegal, but throughout Ireland, because they make it work. We have something like 2,500 volunteers that support the operation in Ireland, and then a similar amount in our partner countries throughout Africa and Eastern Europe. And just got a new centre started in Tyrone this year as well. So it is continuing to grow. The interest is there. And I think, you know, too often when we switch on our news, with all due respect to radio and news, but all we hear is bad news. And I think Team Hope and the Christmas Shoebox Appeal in particular really demonstrates that the world is full of kindness, and there's plenty to go around. And it's a really brilliant way for parents and others to teach that act of kindness in a very simple manner, really. But the effects are just, as I said, if I could show the impact that it has when you meet these children and hand over this small cardboard box that comes with so much more than just toothpaste and cuddly toys. There's so much more, because the kids get it. The kids absolutely get that message that somebody has thought about them very far away.
And what kind of items, Deborah, are you looking for these shoeboxes?
Yeah, it's the very typical four W's we talk about. It's quite easy to remember if we look at it in that regard. So the first W is something to write with. So it could be a copy book, an exercise book, some colouring pencils, something to wear. So socks, pants, little woolly hats, nice little T-shirts, things that are pack up small. Something to write, something to wear, something to wash with. So again, the toothpaste, toothbrushes, soap, a little face cloth, and then something to wow. So it could be a cuddly toy, it could be a yo-yo, it could be a tennis ball, some sunglasses. I've managed to get a leather football in mine the last few years, just pack it up small, deflate it. And on the football, actually, we just got Rafo, a football club. I've actually just came on board this year as well. So yeah, those four W's are very important. And we say things that shouldn't go in the box, and that's important as well, because we think chocolate is always nice at Christmas, but chocolate doesn't travel very well in the heat. Mm-hmm. So, but sweets like Haribos are fine, and liquids, so shampoo or things like that, or even some of the little toys have liquid inside them. Unfortunately, if that liquid spills in one box, it might damage the entire carton that it's gone in, and nobody wants a wet, soggy box when they're receiving their gift. So.
And Deborah, if anybody is interested and they want to help but don't necessarily maybe have the time to do a shoebox themselves, can they make a donation?
They can indeed. Everything is on our website, www.teamhope.ie. But the other aspect, that people don't have time to do a shoebox, we have created over the last 5+ years the online shoebox. So it's almost like Build-A-Bear, but build a box. And those boxes, those donations go, so you can go on and actually it feels like you're building your box on the website. But those are critical as well, because they get into countries, Rwanda and Kenya, where aren't allowed to bring Christmas shoeboxes into. But in those countries over the last few years, We started a project a few years ago in Rwanda, a little small seamstress business with a few sewing machines and ladies making school uniforms and the like, as a little cottage industry almost. And those same ladies last year, through the Christmas shoebox appeal online, created 4,500 school bags, brightly coloured, as you can imagine, African colours, for the kids. And then those items then were bought in country. So it's a lovely way to get involved, and you don't have to go through the trying to find a box or trying to wrap it, which is a challenge as well. So yeah, online shoeboxes or online donations are very much appreciated and make a huge difference as well.
Yeah, and I remember myself, you know, at school we did it every year, and it was a lovely, like, it reminded me that this is the start of Christmas, but it was a lovely thing to do. And, you know, whenever I'd be putting it together with my mum, thinking that I'm connecting with a child on the other side of the world as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. Like after this morning, I'm heading to, because I'm from Castledurg, so I'm working from home, but heading to Dublin this evening. But I'm heading to St. Mary's School in Pettigo this morning. Small school, 54 pupils, but you know, they are so behind it. They have been for years, as have many schools. And like you said, we are finding, but as well, you know, there's that little nostalgia element where people used to do it, like yourself, and then they left school and then they stopped. So we're really encouraging people to get back. Get back at, even if you don't have children, to get back at it, because we really need every single person in Ireland to consider it at least. And there's nothing better, you know, quite selfishly, we do feel really good about doing something. But if you can tell that story when you're doing it with a child or doing it with friends at work or in your sports club. And we're really lucky that because we are a small organisation, we know exactly where every box goes to. So I can, January, February, I can tell, you know, the Donegal centres where their boxes have gone to, show them beautiful imagery and pictures. And we know that they're, you know, 100% genuine. So, and we can continue to tell the story of those children. I mean, I think earlier in the press, when we first went out with the Christmas shoebox appeal a few weeks ago, there was a young man, he's 37 now, Addis, who received a shoebox when he was living in Lithuania almost 30 years ago. And he's now, you know, he's lived in Drogheda. He's came to Ireland when he was 11 or 12, but he's lived in Drogheda most of his life. But he's now doing shoeboxes, not just with his own children. He married an Irish girl, he's three kids, but doing shoeboxes through his workplace, one of the main organisers at his workplace in Drogheda. So it's a beautiful ripple effect. And talking to him, I got to meet him in person a few weeks ago. And, you know, he remembers being very hungry at home and these shoeboxes arriving after a Christmas play or something. But he said what struck him then, he can't quite remember what was in the box. I guess it's almost 30 years ago, but that feeling he still remembers, and hearing him talking about it was so emotive, really, that he was still
amazing.
Those feelings of that somebody thought about him and that there was hope, really. So really encouraging. Yeah.
And that's lovely then, as you mentioned, that ripple effect. Now he's doing it then with his colleagues at work as well. Deborah, remind us, in Donegal, where is the drop-off centres?
Well, the five main centres, I'm not sure where the exact drop-in centres, but they'll all be listed on our website from tomorrow, actually, or the 24th of October. So the main places are Dunfanaghy, Buncrana, Portnew, Letterkenny, Annagrey, and as I said, there's a new one in Tyrone as well, in Omagh. So,
great. And all information is on teamhope.ie. Deborah Lowry, CEO of Team Hope, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Wonderful. Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you. Have a good day.
Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now, we talked during the paper review at the start of the show in relation to a alleged sexual assault on a girl on the grounds of the City West Hotel. It's been confirmed that a man has been charged in connection with that sexual assault, and he's due in court later this morning. Now, the HSE is facing a bill of €7.4 million for destroying PPE. I'm joined by Dr. Peter O'Rourke, retired consultant orthopaedic surgeon. Good morning to you, Dr. O'Rourke.
Hello.
So in terms of this, you'll understand this a bit more than myself working within the healthcare sector. In terms of €7.4 million, it's a huge cost. What's your view on this?
I don't know why they're destroying it. This is equipment that is designed to protect the staff, not causing any risk to patient. I mean, we use sterile equipment. For instance, if you're carrying out surgery, you put on a sterile gown to prevent any contamination of the patient. But with PPE, it is designed purely to protect the staff. So the equipment, it doesn't need to be sterile. Any sterile stuff has a best before date after which you can't use it. But the equipment we're talking about is gowns, plastic aprons, hats and things like that, that do not have a real best before date. So the idea of destroying it and spending 7 million in, or in excess of 7 million to destroy it seems ridiculous because we may need this stuff again.
And what is the reasoning? Is there any best before date at all put on these items?
To be honest, I'm sure the manufacturers put a best before date, but the best before date will relate to sterile use of this stuff. But I can imagine that most of this stuff, it'll end up in landfill, or it might have to even to be incinerated, though God knows why, because it's not a risk to anybody. There's no infection risk or anything like that. But, I mean, we're talking about plastic and probably paper gowns, which are coated with some material to prevent them being... to make them water resistant. And, you know, this stuff will not decay over time. I'm not quite sure if it goes into a landfill, it'll still be there in 30 or 50 years. So why they need to destroy it when we may need it in the future? And when you think back to COVID times, there was not far short of panic every day in hospitals when we were looking to get PPE and we were waiting for deliveries. We weren't sure if they're going to happen. We were literally at times down to the last few hundred gowns that we needed. And there was, you know, real concern. We were looking to any opportunity to, you know, get something that we could use as PPE. And the idea now to be destroying millions of worth of PPE and spending 7 million to do it seemed absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the PPE, you know, it's something that is used all day. Could this be that there has been an excess of orders, or do you understand why they are being destroyed to such a scale?
No, I can't understand why. Regardless of what... you know, the storage costs. I mean, even to the idea if they're spending 7 million to offset 1 million a year storage costs makes no sense because, you know, in 7 years' time, the chance of having another pandemic are probably reasonable. So it seems like spending an awful lot of money to save a relatively small amount in comparison. So I don't understand the logic behind it.
And obviously this 7.4 million euro, the thought of that being invested elsewhere in the health service, you know, say here in Donegal, improving services, that would go such a long way.
Yes. Donegal has been underinvested medically for years. But, I mean, that's why, for instance, the biggest provider of surgical services in Donegal are the NTPF. They used to have a budget of 100 million. Now they have a budget of about 350 million. And in Donegal, if you're put on a surgical waiting list, the chance of the NTPF contacting you within days, if not weeks, is very high. So if they invested 7 million or more in Donegal and put extra beds, etc. in, they would ultimately have saved money rather than increasing the budget of the NTPF by factors of three or four over the years.
Yeah, it just feels to make sense that, you know, when you think, as you outlined there, you know, this is gowns we're talking about. It's not going to take up a massive amount of storage room, you know, and you mentioned, you know, considering we could have another pandemic, that, you know, this isn't going to go. It's not like medication that it needs to be used within a certain date. It just doesn't make sense at all.
No, it really, really doesn't. What you're talking about is paper and plastic, which doesn't break down over time. Now, you'd have to store it in somewhere dry, but most of this stuff is packed individually anyway and is protected from the elements because it has to be kept sterile. So this is sterile equipment that whose sterility is no longer valid, but it doesn't need to be sterile for the purposes which it would be used.
Yeah. Dr. Peter Rourke, retired consultant, orthopaedic surgeon, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And yeah, 7.4 million euro to destroy PPE. As Dr. Rourke was saying there, it just doesn't make sense that, you know, you can store it easily and there would be no damage really to it. Some of your comments now. Attack on a child, that story that we were referencing there. Who allowed these thugs into our country? They also should be arrested. In terms of the cost of living, profit details for the entire Dun Stores company in 2023 are not publicly available because it is a privately owned company. However, its Northern Ireland arm reported a pre-tax profit of £12.7 million for the year, ending December the 29th, 2023, which was a significant increase from the £3.7 million reported in 2022. This was its most profitable year in the region for a decade and represented a threefold increase in profit. We all love fireworks at Halloween, but mostly it's adults setting them off and care is taken when doing it. This week, we have heard and watched young teens in our area letting them off. Do they or their parents have any comprehension of the dangers in letting them off? Someone is going to lose a hand if this continues. How are underage teens buying these? I was out for a walk recently in Derry and I was there with my dog and thankfully she doesn't bat an eyelid. Two fireworks, but there was two young boys had set them off, and where they were, you know, they were throwing the fireworks over a walkway, and there were, it was quite a populated area at the time, and you know, never mind them blowing a hand off themselves, you know, that could have easily hit somebody out walking, and there was other dogs in the area who were very unsettled by the fireworks, and you know, that one, it was a quite a huge dog, and to think that, you know, it could have maybe broke free from its owner, and you know, it was just in such a state of distress. But just yeah, just I don't mind them either. I actually love going to watch the fireworks, but yeah, it's just the dangers of them to those throwing them themselves, and you know, if it hits somebody as well. I'm joined now in studio by Joseph Sweeney, who is the president of the Students' Union of Ireland at ATU. Good morning to you, Joseph.
Morning.
How are you today?
All good.
Good. So you're planning for a big day tomorrow. So the ATU and all technological universities across Ireland are staging a walkout tomorrow. What is behind this?
So essentially it's a protest that's been organised from ourselves and across our AMLA partners, the Unions of Ireland, essentially to protest the lack of or the inequalities and support for technological universities as opposed to the more sort of traditional universities. Essentially, we believe that we're currently in a two-tier education system where the TUs are not getting funded equally in comparison to traditional universities. We believe that, you know, there's a stigma that still exists between, you know, from the top down in this country that essentially the TUs are just, you know, not good enough or not worthy.
And what are some of those things, you know, somebody, you know, engaging with that education system, what are those things that you experience daily?
So it just it depends on it's about creating a better atmosphere and creating a better facilities for students. So like, for example, TUs across the country are without, you know, on campus student purpose built accommodation. Mm-hmm. So currently there's no TU borrowing framework which would allow us, or technological universities rather, to borrow money needed to build these student accommodation buildings.
And we've covered that story a number of times in relation to the lack of accommodation for students, and the ATU had issued a call out. But how severe is that accommodation situation?
It's really, really bad. Now, in fairness, like it was a great, great turnout in terms of our accommodation campaign from landlords across Donegal. We had over 700 rooms made available this time out. But there's a certain extent to where, you know, it's time then to build student accommodation of our own, to house more, because the university is getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, as we expand, as you know, the ATU merger progresses, and you know, as we get to a bigger university, but you know, there's an increasing demand, and that needs to be supplied, because we will get to a stage where, and we're already there. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there'll be so many students coming up from, say, likes of Cork, Dublin, coming up to study in Donegal, always like, or wherever it may be. That simply just won't have anywhere to stay, and they have to, you know, travel, you know, back and forth, the entire time, and it's not suitable if you want to study, particularly if you're looking to study full time.
Yeah, it's a huge undertaking, and it's, you know, that added pressure of, I suppose, in the lead up of moving to college, you know, searching for accommodation, the worry for parents and for the students themselves, and then just not being able to find it and being forced to travel. It's, you know, when you're, there's so much time taken up studying anyway that they just can't physically do that.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's full on in terms of, particularly if taking a full time course, you're there 4 or 5 days a week. You need somewhere, you need to be in a, you know, suitable and appropriate location, and sort of living situation to be able to manage that, particularly as well with a lot of students, given, you know, the increase in fees and such, that you'll need to be managing part-time work potentially as well. So yeah, it's a call for more support for, you know, particularly ATU, MTU.
Would you say that that is the biggest concern?
Well, I mean, there's a number of concerns, but particularly from our side, and you know, the our sort of from our role as students, particularly it would be. There's other concerns as well in terms of, you know, postgraduate spended fees. There was a promise that, you know, ensuring payment of full 25,000 for all postgraduate spended fees, but TU's currently, you know, we're claiming that we haven't received that funding to be able to level that up. Professorships as well, I mean, from sort of a lecture and staff side, you know, there's no clear structure and pathway for promotion in terms of getting to that professorship title. And so what you're left with then is people, or like, you know, academics and senior staff, you know, waiting and waiting for opportunities to become open. And then, you know, in the meantime, they're looking at traditional universities, or they're looking abroad at opportunities that they can actually, you know, progress their careers.
And obviously the ATU, it's doing such great work and offering so many courses, and it's building year on year, and you want to retain that staff as well. And it's no fault of the ATU, but it's just the processes that are in place at the minute.
Yeah, it's the current structures in place. Like, you know, when ATU merged from the legacy, you know, LYIT, GMT, you know, so on, it should have been a platform to create a stronger university. And in many ways, it has. Of course, it has. Yeah. And, you know, the growth is happening all the time, and we encourage it. But, you know, there's a belief that the government essentially view these TU mergers as just cost-cutting exercises. So we're just getting rid of duplication of services. Mm. You go from four presidents on every campus to one president on every campus, for example. When really it shouldn't be a cost-cutting exercise at all. It should be a platform to then grow the services in other areas, such as student accommodation, such as, you know, pathways for, you know, postgraduate and things like that.
And particularly here in Donegal, you know, and in the Northwest as it is, there is the need for that. There is the need for the ATU and for it to be expanded, and all those issues that you've highlighted so far, you know, they need to be addressed to allow the ATU expand to meet the need here in Donegal.
Yeah, well, there's an increasing need all the time. And, like, you know, it has, in terms of services here, it has improved. So there's more people travelling up. More courses are becoming available all the time. We're seeing it now. You know, at our campus, it would be quite quiet on the Fridays, but because of the more campuses, it's busy the whole week through.
Yeah.
And so we need the services, we need the supply to match that demand.
And were these all promises that were made when that merger was happening?
Yeah, well, certainly in terms of, like, sort of the postgraduate fees and things like that, these were promises that were made by the government that just haven't been held up, because whether it be they just don't view it as priority because it's just, oh, the TU's up in the Northwest, you know. But, like, if you're looking to merge these universities, and it was these mergers are encouraged by the government to essentially to create stronger universities. They need to match that up with action now. They need to match that up with support, financial support for, you know, over a variety of different services.
Yeah, and in terms of, I'm just looking at some of the points that yous have stated in relation to the walkout tomorrow. Increased funding to ensure that courses are taught through the medium of Irish. Are there any courses at all that are taught through Irish at the minute?
Very, very little. Mm. Very, very, like, across the country, very, very little. So it wouldn't even, like, it's obviously in the TU aspect we're looking for this, but across the country as well, there is very little courses. And particularly if you consider the areas where, you know, TUs exist, so Cork, Kerry, Donegal, large, you know, Irish-speaking bases, that there's just such a lack of courses that are available for Irish speakers to learn the language, but also learn whatever subject they wish in that language. You know, support for more courses to become available will naturally lead to more people inclined to take up those courses, because there's a better variety of options to choose from.
Yeah.
If you're an Irish speaker and there's a subject where, you know, you're not particularly fond of, you'll just go into the English speaking version of that. But we should try and be promoting both languages as best as possible, particularly if Irish is our first language.
Yeah, because primary and secondary schools are making such great efforts, and you want that to continue. And as you mentioned here, you know, even in Letterkenny, what the schools are doing in terms of the Irish language, to be able to offer then that further education, you know, it's a no-brainer, really.
Yeah, no, it's definitely improving. Definitely can't say it across the board. But then you hit a stopgap then when it comes to third level education, and there's just not the is now the opportunities then to expand on that.
Mm. And you will have an ear to the grind among students. Are these all issues that they feel that, not that they're being discriminated against, but there is a difference between, say, if we say traditional universities, you know, the ATU has university status. Do they feel that they are being treated differently?
Yeah, I believe, like, particularly if you look at the likes of the accommodation issue, for example, like, particularly, like, these traditional universities, you know, that was there was three projects announced in the recent budget for growth of, you know, new student accommodation being built all in universities, nothing in the TU sector at all. There's been no accommodation built since the 2000s in for a TU sector. There was one, but that, you know, it was an IT issue. It was a legacy issue there. So, but like since the 2000s, there's been pretty much nothing in terms of the TU sector getting further accommodation at all, because there's no framework to borrow this money to actually build this accommodation. And like the, as I believe, coming from conversations from, you know, senior government officials and student bodies and those sort of conversations, there's a belief that, you know, they look at the TUs and they think, you know, that there's, you know, they don't have the capacity or they don't have the knowledge to build these accommodations, which is a bizarre comment.
Yeah, because actually there was an Oireachtas committee recently, and I think a member from the ATU spoke at it, and they had done so much research. They had identified lands in Letterkenny that accommodation could be built on. So that's, you know, flies in the face of that.
Well, there's been it's been pushed from the ATU university level from their senior officials for a long time now. There's been lands identified in Letterkenny, in Galway, and in Sligo. But like the options is there. Like we're pushing this where like ATU have offered to trial a possible TU framework as a trial basis.
Okay.
But there's not been enough support. There's not been enough commitment to actually look at this issue and try and, you know, do something on it and action it.
Yeah. And it's amazing that, you know, the current students are doing this now, because this is for future generations as well to come.
Yeah, and it will be for future generations, but the call needs to happen now, because we have been waiting a long, long time for this. You know, I did 3 years, obviously, as an undergraduate in law, and you know, like these issues weren't even like considered, to be honest, in terms of from a government level. Like they just like, if it's always been lobbied. There's always been letters sent, but now is a time for, you know, a real diverse set of actions, and this is one of them, to walk out of classes and to show across the nation that this is an issue, that students recognise it and that staff recognise it as well.
Yeah.
And they've been very supportive of the walkout and, you know, across the board.
Yeah, because that professorship that you mentioned earlier, that is hugely important for the staff, but in terms of the education that is being provided at TUs right across the country as well.
Yeah, well, it affects everything. It affects it affects the level of education that the students are getting, the level of education that the staff are able to afford. Because if you're in a TU and the system is essentially wait for a vacancy and then you're be able to promote it to a more senior position, you're not going to stay there for 10, 20, 30. You see this across the board in Ireland, across public jobs. You're not going to stay there and just wait for that vacancy to appear to hopefully apply for it and get it. You're going to move, you're going to look at your other options. You're going to look at your traditional universities, Trinity, UCD, UCC, maybe, you know, abroad as well. So we are losing, you know, academics, and we're losing the potential to grow and losing the potential to learn more.
Yeah. So that is tomorrow. The walkout is happening at 12 noon, and you'd obviously be calling for support for this.
Yeah, well, look, we're calling for the support for this, but like, we want all students to essentially walk out of their classes at 12 o'clock and to join us outside. You know, it's really important that everybody gets behind this, because, as I say, this is for now and this is for the future, and this affects students and staff across the board of all TUs. We need to show that this is an issue that we recognise, and we need to talk about it, and we need to force action, because it is about time. That we bring something forward on this.
Yeah. Joseph Sweeney, President of the Students' Union at ATU in Donegal, thank you so much for calling up this morning, and good luck with the walkout tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhenney's. Our Christmas shop has now opened for all your festive shopping needs. Explore our extensive range of decorations, bedding and more in our homeware department, in-store or shop online at McElhenney's.com today.
Today's weather, mostly cloudy with showery outbreaks of rain and drizzle this morning. Scattered showers and sunny spells will develop through the day. Highest temperatures of 10 to 11 degrees in moderate to fresh west to northwest winds. It does look very blustery out there this morning. And unfortunately, yeah, just the weather seems to be definitely hitting that winter element at the moment. We have the Community Garda information slot coming up after 10, so make sure to stay tuned for that. And a little later in the show as well, we'll be having a Q&A on polling day as the presidential election takes place on Friday. People have the choice to elect either Catherine Conley or Heather Humphreys to be the next president of Ireland. So if you have any questions with regards to what you need to bring to the polling station, where you need to go, what the process is, get in touch by calling us on 074 91 25000, or you can text or WhatsApp at 086 60 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. The news at 10 o'clock is coming up in a couple of minutes.